ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we are beginning the Janmashtami Krishna Katha series. There will be many speakers, much better than what you are experiencing now. And of course, Maharaj also has agreed that he will speak. He is a bit indisposed, so he will speak later. This is Canto 10, Chapter 2, Text 26. Satyavratam satyaparam trisatyam satyasya yonim nihitam cha satye satyasya satyam vritam satya netram satyatmakam tvam sharanam prapanna. This is a prayer by the demigods. You can just repeat, it's not written here, but you can repeat the words. Palm. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. The demigods prayed, O Lord, you never deviate from your vow, which is always perfect, because whatever you decide is perfectly correct and cannot be stopped by anyone. Being present in the three phases of cosmic manifestation, creation, maintenance and annihilation, you are the supreme truth. Indeed, unless one is completely truthful, one cannot achieve your favor, which therefore cannot be achieved by hypocrites. You are the active principle, the real truth in all the ingredients of creation, and therefore you are known as Antaryami, the inner force. You are equal to everyone, and your instructions apply for everyone, for all time. You are the beginning of all truth. Therefore, offering our obeisances, we surrender unto you. Kindly give us protection. Vandeyam. This is a prayer by the demigods who are approaching Mother Devaki as she is imprisoned in the prison house of Kamsa. Since Lord Krishna is described as the absolute truth, the supreme cause of all causes, the Lord and Master of everything, he chooses to appear in any situation. There is no situation which is impossible for him. As this verse describes, he is unstoppable. So therefore, the appearance of the Master is a cause for celebration for those who are his associates, servants. And just like the appearance of a policeman is a cause for concern, is a cause for worry, is a cause for anger, belligerence, antagonism in the minds of a criminal. But the same policeman seen by a law-abiding citizen, there is hope, happiness, security, assurance. The policeman doesn't change his nature. He is trained to do something. But why do two people see him differently? It's because this has something to do with their own natures or propensities. Of course, most criminals don't feel that they are criminals. And there lies the problem. If somebody honestly feels he's a criminal, he can't go on for a long time. If you know what you're doing is illegal, you can't continue it. So the intelligence is described as the charioteer. And the mind is the rein in the chariot model. The intelligence is supposed to be in control of the five horses of our senses using the mind. But the biggest problem is the mind takes control. And therefore, even if the intelligence warns us so many times, don't do this, don't do this, there is no encouragement for doing that. So this material world serves one purpose as a free land for those who want to enjoy their mind to the fullest, knowing fully well that this path is full of dangers, suffering. At the same time, it is also a place where those who want to control their mind and reform it, they also get a chance. Those who want to obey the laws, control the mind basically means you have to obey the laws of Krishna, otherwise there is no way we can control the mind. They are called asuras or demigods. Those who do not want to control their mind, or those who feel that there is no need to control the mind, or worse, those who think they control their mind. A small test whether you control your mind or your mind controls you is if you feel that you control your mind, and surely you don't control it. So we read in the prayers of the acharyas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays that Gopinath manaye pagala mora. He says, oh Gopinath, my mind is pagal, it's mad. Na mane shasana, it doesn't obey good instructions. Sada achetana, it's always engrossed in matter. Satyaraj Prabhu, one disciple of Prabhupada and a good scholar, he gives an interesting light. Material nature is personified as Durga Devi. And the English word matter, M-A-T-T-E-R, is also very close to the word matar or matru, which is the Sanskrit for mother. Again, the same word in English. Matru, mother, matter. So even that word also has that understanding that essentially this material world is a manifestation of Durga Devi. She has manifested this. Her name is Durga. Dur means difficult, almost impossible. And Ga, Gamayati, to go. It is impossible to go away from her control. Once she catches you, it is impossible to go away. But then everybody in this material world tries to go away from her control. And therefore, this is the big drama unfolding here in this material world every moment. Everything which happens here is part of that. Currently, our minds are preoccupied with terrorism, security, jobs, unemployment, living in a city, All these are different manifestations by which Durga Devi controls us. If somebody says, all my food, clothing, shelter problems are solved, then there are some mental problems. If your mental problems are solved, then somebody else has a mental problem who's next to you. So his mental problem causes you a mental problem. Prabhupada says, in this godless civilization, every nation has become a headache for every other nation. That's what it is now. So since there are so many so-called truths which hit us every day, all those who buy newspapers, why do we spend our hard-earned money for a newspaper? Because we feel that this particular scrap of paper speaks the truth. And they say, at least they stand for the truth. But of course, these truths are so changing. Every day you have a new truth. So if yesterday's truth is no longer true today, in one sense you are improving. You have a higher truth today that such and such person is guilty. And today you say, no, he's not guilty. But that also means that what you had yesterday was a lie, was a half-truth. And our lives today are so much enamored by these half-truths that we simply do not feel the urge to understand whether there could be any absolute truth. Ask philosophers that, sir, do you think there could be something which is absolute? And they say, no. By the way, which is an absolute statement. If someone says, there is no absolute truth, this is an absolute statement. That means he has checked each and everything in his universe. So what are relative truths? What's a relative? You say, he's my relative. What makes you think he's your relative? Well, he's my father, sister, son. So there are two people involved which cause him a relative. Your father, his sister and her son. Remove them and there is no relationship. If we say we are all Indians and we have to love this country, India, well, on 14th of August 1947, this statement had no value because there was no India. So that I am an Indian, I have to love this, is a relative truth. So if we briefly introspect, if we briefly try to understand in my day-to-day life, how many truths are relative, we'll find that almost everything what I do is relative. Someone works hard, why? Well, I have to feed my family. Why your family alone? Well, I have a relationship with this particular set of individuals. I care for a community. I cheer for a particular team. I work hard under someone. If some company's profits go down, I'm happy. If some company's profits go up, I'm sad. In this world of relative truths, as we said, they are truths, no doubt. There is no harm in that. But they are only for a very, very short period of time. They consume our attention. They suck away our energy. And if we are also relative truths, now because some philosophers, they find so much of a problem in this world, like one Russian gentleman told Prabhupada, Swamiji, when the body is finished, the owner of the body also is finished. People can accept this kind of adjustment. that we live only one life and we come here, as Shakespeare said, all the world's a stage and all men and women are actors. So we act our part. But why is it that somebody's acting is to harm me? Why is it that somebody's acting is to cause me trouble? And just like animals don't know what's hurting them, what's helping them, their lives are completely mechanical. Human beings too tend to compromise. In this complete sea of ignorance, this is the shining prayer by the demigods, who are not fools, who are not less intelligent people. They are saying, O Lord, you never deviate from your vow, which is always perfect, because whatever you decide is perfectly correct and cannot be stopped by anyone. Prabhupada clarifies by giving a footnote here. The Lord vows, Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyuthanam adharmasya tadatmanam sajamyaham. To honor this vow, the Lord appeared. Who told Krishna that you have to take a vow? Like a president, he's going to become the big boss of the country, but somebody tells him that, take a vow that you will serve the country. And he says, okay, today I vow, I will do this, blah, 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 whatever. He has to be appointed. It's a funny thing. He becomes the top man, the first citizen of a country when some people approve him. That means without their approval, he cannot be. The president of America is the most powerful office in the world. But he also can be impeached. If they say, we have lost faith in you, resign. Like one president during Prabhupada's tenure, when Prabhupada was here, he did some mistakes. And Prabhupada said, look at your president. You are the most powerful people in the world. Your president is the most powerful person here. And when he commits a mistake, he's told, leave, get out. And he says, no, I won't. And they said, do it. He says, no. And finally he has to leave. So does Krishna also have to take a vow because someone tells him to? The answer is no. Why Krishna feels for this material world? Sometimes we feel that, you know, let this whole thing go to hell. Or let this thing be burned down. I don't care. Just like in the court of Akbar, a very curious case came up. Two women fighting over a baby. Now, if the baby was a bigger boy, he could have asked, who is your mother? But the baby is 6 months old. And both women claim that this is mine, this is mine. So Akbar was thinking, I can't understand what to make of it. So he said, Birbal, could you just try to solve this? He looked at the situation for a moment and he said, yes, I got it. Then he called the executioner with a big axe. He said, I have decided we can't waste the court's time in such kind of trifling matters. So since both of you claim that this baby is your, okay, so I'll cut in half, you take this half, you take the other half. And he was serious. The baby was put on a pedestal and he told that man, do it. As he raised his axe, one lady said, please stop. He said, why? I don't want it. Give the whole baby to her. And Birbal said, she is a real mother. Why? Because there is natural affection. You don't want something which you have some affinity for go down the drain or be destroyed. Similarly, It is Krishna alone who claims that all these living entities are my part and parcels. I am their seed-giving father. No other personality claims like that. Well, in one word, no other claims because they are not. The demigods at least are supposed to be gentlemen, which they are many times. Some are not when they become forgetful. But then they get a reprimand from Krishna and then they start behaving properly. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada begins the purport by saying the demigods or devotees. Many times in Prabhupada's purports, demigods and devotees are taken equally. Now that doesn't mean you and me should feel, oh, we are demigods now. Not in that sense. If at all we obey, if we obey Krishna's rule, or at least we have a desire to follow Krishna's instructions, we come in the category of demigods. In a sense, those who want to become. Demigods or devotees know perfectly well that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a true substance, whether within this material world or in the spiritual world. Srimad Bhagavatam begins therefore with the words, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Satyam Param Dhimahi. Now this Om Namo Bhagavate is so common in India that any Tom, Dick, Harry is putting Om Namo Bhagavate and his guru's name or somebody else's name. That's the problem. There are too many competitors. Too many chiefs, very few Indians. That's the saying in English. The supreme truth can be approached or understood by the supreme method as declared by the supreme truth. Prabhupada is saying here, the supreme truth can be understood by the supreme method as declared by the supreme truth. Bhaktya mam abhijanati yavan yashchasmi tattvataha. Tattva means the truth. So bhakti or devotional service is the only way to understand the absolute truth. For protection, therefore, the demigods surrender to the supreme truth, not to the relative truth. Suppose you put your money in a bank and the bank goes bankrupt. Then your passbook shows 3 lakh rupees. But actually it's not. There is no money in the bank. The bank doesn't exist. Like one person had come in the ashram many years ago and you asked him what is his qualification. He would say, I am a PhD. And he was a PhD. Unfortunately, somebody declared that, disclosed that his university is defunct now. So his PhD is true. That paper says this person achieved PhD in Hindi studies. But the university no longer exists. So what is the value of that PhD? That is the relative truth. So sometimes when the Shastra explains, don't worship demigods, only worship Krishna, people take it as a personal matter. But I like him. You know, I like the way he is. He gives me so many things I ask for. But at the end of the whole thing, when this universe is about to be finished, you, your demigod, your worship and your boons, all will be over. And somebody might say, so what? Not so what, you will start the whole thing again. There is no more pain in this material world than to start something again. The same thing. In Greek mythology, there was Sisyphus, a king. A Sisyphean task is something which you do again and again, and it's laborious, it's boring, tedious. So Sisyphus had a big stone on his back. And he was promised, you put this stone on the top of the mountain peak, balance it there. If it stays there, you're free. So poor old King Sisyphus would have to take it, back-breaking work. He would somehow put it there, but the stone was programmed in such a way, it would roll on the other side. So he would say, oh, where did I go wrong? maybe I should try that angle. Maybe, oh, that is better. That path is having much less stones. Little did he know that this is going to be continued ad infinitum. There's a sigma equation there. For those who are interested, it goes on continuously. Or as recently we concluded the world's greatest cultural festival, the world soccer meet. So just like maybe 64 teams were battling for the World Cup, in our game with material nature, sometimes in the first half we are winning 4-0. And we say, oh, all I need to do is somehow play defense in the second half. And then that's it. What happens is, it's 45 minutes each. We are not so much into football in Bombay anyway, but just to give an example. Let's say for the 44 minutes of the second half, nothing happens. And you're so happy. I am so close to achieve my target. Obviously, nobody can shoot 5 goals in a minute. And then before your very eyes, you see, damn, 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 damn. And you say, what? And then the referee blows the whistle. That means Yamaraj blows his whistle. And then you get a red card. You don't even get a red card. You just see the game's off. 5-4. Maya wins. And that's so painful. People feel, why can't this world be truthful? Why doesn't material nature tell us the things as they are? Now it's as if she doesn't say the truth. There are so many ways in which the same truth comes again and again and again. But the fact is that because the mind is attached to enjoying matter, which we should remember is our mother, Durga Devi, we try to enjoy her, and that's a problem. A man had 4 daughters. This is from our Niti Shastra. He got all of them married. Somehow he didn't get good matches. The sons-in-law were all, in his terms, good-for-nothing people. But as is the Indian custom, on Diwali day, they all come to their in-laws' place, expecting a nice reception, feasting every day. So he says, okay, once, only once, I'll tolerate them. So the 4 days of Diwali, somehow begs, borrows, steals money, feeds him properly. And then the next day and the next day and the next day, but nobody's moving. So he tells his wife, what is this? You know, these are not cultured people. They should just come for Diwali and they know my situation and they should just buzz off now. They should go out. So she said, I don't know. You handle this matter. So he says, okay. Every day they used to be given an invitation. Please come. Prasadam is served. And then water for washing their hands, water for washing their feet. He says, I won't give an invitation now. No servant goes to call them. And the first one says, this is an insult. I'm not invited for food, for lunch. I'm leaving. But other 3 say, so what? As long as he feeds us, what's the problem? So they keep on eating for the next 2-3 days. He says, this first one at least was a cultured person, little bit. So he says, from tomorrow, don't give them hot chapatis. Just make whatever you can, or even give them stale food. What's the problem? So the first time, the 3 of them sit, and one of them sees, cold chapatis, where are hot chapatis? He said, no more hot chapatis. He said, that's it. I'm leaving. He goes. But the other 2 say, as long as we get something to eat, what's the problem? After 3 or 4 days, when this man is really angry, he says, today you should serve them dish water. That means what water comes out of washing your previous utensils, serve them that. So as they sit, and one person sees what's it, and he can't believe his eyes that this is what is being served today. And he says, this is it, I'm moving. But the fourth one has such incredible stamina and resilience. No one goes to invite him. Still he comes dot at 1 o'clock, sits at the appointed place. It's not even stale chapatis, it is sometimes food with some fungus in it or dish water. Finally he comes out with a stick and starts beating him up. He says, get out you rascal from my house. So as he was coming out, taking stock of bones, whether he has lost any, or he says, if he wanted me to get out, why didn't he tell me so? Now although this story is very funny, those who are intelligent, they come here, they take one look at this world, and they pack their belongings. I am leaving. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, this place is no place for a gentleman. There are some who stick on, who fight, who show their best. Let's give it our best performance. And finally they say, you can't win her. And there are multitudes who say, so what? Life is supposed to be like that. Unless you experience misery, where is the experience of tasting a little bit of happiness which comes later? In fact, this misery enhances that. Like for example, in the bomb blast, few days ago, suddenly the railway stalls had made vada pav and everything, and there were no customers because everybody had left. So what if you feel that, oh, one good thing about the bomb blast was, I got to eat a vada pav for only 10 paisa. Isn't it nice? Now, is that happiness? Did you see trains going up in smoke? Life snuffed out, and there's something which is cheaper on that day because that fellow had no customers. He said, okay, lot ka bhav le lo. So every bit of happiness, if you just turn it a little bit, the other angle is so horrible a misery. But the fact is that for many people, where else do we go? We are born in this soil. Indian blood runs through our veins. So many dialogues people say. So the relative truths, they sort of encompass everything in our existence. And therefore, we don't even care that there could be absolute truth. And as I said, in today's philosophy classes or philosophers, if an inquiry is made, what if there is a truth which never changes? And Prabhupada makes it clear, what does never mean? Past, present and future. Creation, maintenance and destruction. Only Lord Krishna is described as someone who doesn't change. Now if, like in an equation, what's the harm in accepting theoretically? You may say, but Krishna, you know, is a very confusing personality. What he does is not to be understood by anyone. So how do we accept him as the absolute truth? Why not make a beginning? Why not understand what is the meaning of absolute truth? Then try to fit in whether Krishna fits the bill or not. Nowadays, people begin their understanding by saying, Krishna cannot be the absolute truth because of so many reasons. So obviously, as they say, the jury is biased. The referee is biased. Like a neighboring country, in a particular sport, cricket, the umpire showed a new sign. And they were asking, what does it mean? Like, this means out. that particular batsman is out. So he did like this. So they asked, what does it mean? He says, you and four others after you, all out. So they said, with this kind of umpiring, why can't this team be the world champion? Surely you can be. So what we find today when people try to read Krishna's life or try to understand the importance of Janmashtami in their life, it's so very biased. Oh, because Krishna did this, he can't be God. Oh, because he did this, he can't be God. And of course, the knowledge which they get, so-called knowledge, doesn't come in parampara. So what do we have to say? Why do we have to read Prabhupada's purports again and again and again? Prabhupada said, not because I have given them, but because I have remained true to the parampara. And this is a very important thing. Parampara means I get knowledge from my guru, he gets from his guru. Who gets from his guru? Unbroken chain up to Lord Krishna himself. No breakage in this system can be tolerated. Just like electricity will not jump from one session to another, there has to be a power cable. Similarly, this knowledge doesn't jump from one guru to another, with nobody in between. There is always, what is the power cable? That pure dedication. Of course, this knowledge of Krishna consciousness doesn't depend upon paper or software or books or whatever. It's a knowledge which is transmitted through the heart. Tene Brahma Ridaya Adi Kavaye. Tene, this person, Brahma is the Vedic knowledge, Rida in the heart of Adi Kavi. Adi Kavi, Kavi is used to denote a very learned person. So Lord Brahma is described here as the Adi Kavi in Srimad Bhagavatam. We continue, it's a long purport. There are persons who worship various demigods, but the supreme truth Krishna declares in Bhagavad Gita, Antavattu falam tesham tadbhavatyalpa medasam. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods and their fruits are limited and temporary. Worship of demigods may be useful for a limited time, but the result is antavat, perishable. This material world is impermanent. The demigods are impermanent, and the benedictions derived from the demigods are also impermanent. Whereas, the living entity is eternal, nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam. Every living entity, therefore, must search for eternal happiness, not temporary happiness. The words satyam param dhimahi indicate that one should search for the absolute truth, not the relative truth. Now there is a discussion about protection. What kind of protection Krishna gives? While offering prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narasimha Devi Prahlad said, Balasya neha sharanam pitaro Narasimha nartasya chagadam udanvati majjatau nau. Generally it is understood that the protectors for a child, who protects one's child? The parents. But Prabhupada says here, this is not actually the fact. The real protector is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Taptasya tat pratividhir ijhan jatseshtas tavad vibho tanubritam tadupekshitanam. If neglected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a child, despite the presence of his parents, will suffer. And a diseased person, despite all medical help, will die. In this material world, where there is a struggle for existence, men have invented many means for protection. But these are useless if the Supreme Personality of Godhead rejects them. Therefore, the demigods purposefully say, Satyatmakam Tvam Sharanam Prapanna. Real protection can be obtained from you, O Lord, and therefore we surrender unto you. We find that, just like in our farm, New Govardhan Farm, I was inquiring why there is load shedding every day. When I went there for some seva, the devotee said, 6 hours every day you don't get any electricity. So I said, so why don't we pay them? He says, well, in this part nobody pays. I said, what? He said, yes, entire villages entire cluster of 25-40 villages, maybe more. No one pays any electricity dues. You want something, you just throw a wire and accept the mercy. And when it doesn't come, so the government also is smart. You know the timings, they have no electricity there. Morning 7 to 9, afternoon 1 to 3, and evening 7 to 9. So prime time television is already cut out. Life is peaceful. And sometimes if they are too enthusiastic, also 1 or 2 hours in between. So they don't complain, people who receive, they don't complain because it's already free anyway. So in this situation, if someone tries to pay his dues, and they do pay, when the inspectors come, and they say, hey, you steal, right? They say, okay, here is something, just, here is something to buy your kids a new dress. Now you are paying. You are paying for your electricity. Whom are you paying but? You are not paying the agency which produces it. You are paying some agent of that agency. And isn't that a bribe? I mean, isn't that what you call a bribe? You may say, but it works. When this fellow comes, I give him 100 rupees and he doesn't trouble him for the next month. Similarly, if you have some problems and you give some demigod something and then you say, now he doesn't trouble me for some time. That's a bribe. So Krishna says, avidhi purvakam. That's not proper. You may say, I have paid, I just don't have the receipt. How will he give the receipt? He doesn't keep one. Has anyone given a bribe? And I mean, in India we can say all these things in public. Did you ever get a receipt for like 10,045 in regards to corruption charges for settling your sales tax bills? Never. Similarly, benedictions given by the demigods has no standing in the absolute realm. You might say that, oh, we did this Shatachandi Yajna, or we did this Navakundi thing, or we did this 9 Mondays and 24 Tuesdays and what not. You can do that till the end of this earth. You can do that till the end of the earth only. Because afterwards everything will be finished. That particular demigod, you may meet him in a different dress. Because demigods is a position. It is not that Indra is a person. Indra means a leader. Just like you may have a chartered accountant, and that institution is quite strict. If a chartered accountant is found to be dealing in malpractices, they might take away his membership. They may debar him and say that this fellow is no longer valid as a CA. If he signs any books of accounts, they won't be taken as valid. That's the position of a demigod. If Krishna doesn't agree that he should be a demigod, he loses his position. The Ishopanishad describes this as sambhutam and asambhuti. One who is dependent, one who is not dependent. One has to use one's intelligence. The Lord demands that one surrender unto him. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. And he further says, sakrideva prapanno yas tavasmiti cha yachate abhayam dadami tasmai abhayam sarvada tasmai dadamye tadvratam mama. This is from the Ramayana Yuddhakanda. If one surrenders unto me sincerely saying, my Lord, from this day I am fully surrendered unto you, I always give him protection. That is my vow. So what happens is when the living entity approaches Krishna and says, I want to surrender unto you. He, from his point of view, is trying to mend relationships. He is trying to establish some sambandha from his side. From Krishna's point of view, there is no need to do that. Krishna doesn't need to check out you. You want to surrender to me? Sorry, I can't find your name here. Come some other time. No. There is no breakage or blockage from Krishna's point of view. Just imagine the greatness of Krishna. Not only he claims all pure devotees to be his own, everybody even in this material world, Krishna says, they are mine. They are in me. Atmani athomai. Yena bhutani asheshani drakshasi atmani athomai. He explains to Arjun, when you get this kind of the status of self-realized soul, when you see with transcendental vision, you will understand, Arjun, that not only no one is lost, drakshasi means you will see, that nobody is lost from my point of view. They might claim whatever. A madman, what he cannot speak. Prabhupada used to quote the Bengali proverb, Pagale ki na bole, chagale ki na khaye. What a madman won't speak? He's mad. Why does he speak like that? Because he's mad. Why is he mad? He's speaking like that. So it's complimentary. And a chagal is a goat. What she won't eat? Anything. So from the living and this point of view, oh, there is no God. Like somebody has a tiff with his father. And somebody asks him, how's your father? I don't know. No, what do you mean you don't know? I don't have a father. I never had a father. That's not possible. If there was no father, there won't be you. So we can see the amount of avidya which has accumulated when big, big so-called leaders, scientists, philosophers, and they claim there is no God. What is worse than saying there is no God? There is no need of a God. There is no need. When you say there is no God, it is not that the post of God is vacant. It is, I'm trying to be there, I'll try to adjust myself and I'll be that God. Whether someone is a so-called political leader, or like the Beatles once said, I think we have become more popular than Jesus Christ. They were actually thinking like that. At least a few of them. Why? Because look at the number of people who know us. Look at the number of records we have made. But what we don't know is the name fame which we enjoy here is like the name fame somebody enjoys in a prison cell. Is any of you famous as a good citizen in any of India's prisons? You may say, nobody knows me there. In fact, nobody knows you there is your glory. Isn't it? If you say, you want to know me who I am? Go to Arthur Road Jail. Go to Tihar Jail. Ask anyone there and they will tell you exactly who I am. You may say, okay, see you later. But that's not your glory. So the glory of a pure devotee is not that how much this material world appreciates him. Narottam Das Thakur has written that, Shri Guru, you are so famous, Ebe Jasya Ghoshuk Tribhuvana. Tribhuvan knows your glories. Shri Ramananda Rai, when he was discussing with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Mahaprabhu said, who is a famous person? He says, anyone who is a devotee of Radha Krishna is the most famous personality. And we might say, well, look, now I'm trying to become a devotee of Radha Gopinath. And who knows me? For people whom it matters, they know you. If this world doesn't care, who cares? Because ultimately the fame in this world is to be famous among this kind of populace. It's no glory. So this is Lord Ramchandra, same Krishna, but in a different avatar. And the situation is when Vibhishan comes and says, I have always been your devotee. Now that my brother Ravan does not desire to obey even sage advice coming from me, I have decided not to be on his side. And it's war, it's a very tense situation, and Sugriv, Hanuman, all the monkey soldiers, and they are sort of discussing among themselves, what to do, you know, he has come now, why is he come now, why not earlier? And then some people say, my lord, I wish to say something, we are just about to begin our offensive, at this time if somebody comes from the enemy camp, it could be risky. We shouldn't allow this. The Vedas also have something called Dhanurved, Yuddha Tantra. If somebody comes, at least keep him in, quarantine him, keep him somewhere, arrest him, or even kill him. Because he's an enemy, the war is declared already. So, Lord Ram says, no. Once, if somebody says, Sakrit Eva, it's not that you have to repeat. Like somebody says, repeat, I won't do this. Like in schools, you know, I won't miss my homework. Write it 500 times and bring back the notebook this Monday. I'm speaking from self-experience, of course. So that is told us repeatedly so that it sinks in our skull. But Lord Ramchandra is saying, I don't need somebody's repeated pleadings that I want to be your servant. Even if once somebody says, even if half jokingly, I pay heed, I pay attention. I'm always paying attention. I'm the closest person next to your heart, next to where you are situated in your heart. And then Lord makes a very wonderful statement. He says, what to speak of Vibhishan? If Ravan comes now and says that, okay, what's happened has happened, let bygones be bygones. I want to be your friend. I surrender unto you. I may forgive him too. Now, of course, in the material world, somebody might say, I forgive you. Why? Because I don't have any choice. That's not the case with the Lord. He's powerful. Lord Ramchandra's pastimes, because he's called Maryada Purushottam, all the things which he showed, he tried at most to follow the Maryada. And when it was beyond it, it just burst out. So he told Samudra Devta, the ocean demigod, that we have this problem, we have so many monkeys and they can't swim, they don't like water, so you want to go, so please part. And the ocean should have recognized that he's my boss, there is this Lord coming here. And the ocean began to give excuse, hem and haw, and on this way, that way. Finally said, will you do it or should I just evaporate you? Now, Lord Ramchandra didn't bring somebody else that, if you don't do this, I'll call him. It is said by his glance. The same sweet Lord Ramchandra, greenish complexion, always very humble, sweet-natured, softly talking. By one glance, the ocean began to boil. Now we have people, you know, some people they can bend a spoon or something by looking at it. One in a 6 billion. That fellow also teaches the course, charges a hefty sum. I don't see any students doing it successfully. But at least he can do that, bend a spoon. But here, by one glance, can somebody boil even 10 ml of water by looking at it? You may look at it and boil with rage, why it's not happening. But that water needs to get the temperature, not your brain. But by his glance, the Lord made the ocean boil. The sharks, the timis are huge fish. And there are timingala, those who eat those fish. Now, timis are the ones who eat sharks for breakfast every day. And timingalas are even bigger than them. And they began to come from the ocean bed. And they were tossing and they were shouting, shrieking. And Samudra Devta could see that, hey, this person has upset my whole office. How am I supposed to run my business here? And he says, maybe he is my boss. Many times demigods, you know, in the course of duty, so much of strain, managing the affairs of the cosmos, you somehow forget who's employing you, who's paying your salary. Like some businesses, or not business, but at least some government offices, the clerks are paid to say no. You go there and say that, is my file come here?
No.
Will it come tomorrow?
No.
Will you help me?
No.
What's the time? No. Just getting 5,000 rupees for saying no is like quite a good job. So similarly, many times we see the demigods in the course of doing their duty and thinking the cosmos to be such an important business. Oh, if I don't provide water, what will happen? Oh, if I don't support the soil, if I don't take care of the environment, of the seasons, of the flowers, of the bees, of insects, everything has a demigod in charge. Just like every department has one in charge. And one day when the Supreme Lord comes, not in his big style, but in a simple, small manner, and just like they treat everybody else, hey, get out, stand in line. And then he says, who, me? Oh, sorry. I didn't recognize you. I'm so sorry. So Krishna has to put everybody in their place. Krishna's devotees, though, they never forget him. They can never forget him because they don't take managing cosmos as their main business. They think rendering service unto Krishna is their main business. For example, Hiranyakashipu was asking his son, why do you claim that the source of your energy and my energy is the same? People get very angry. Sense enjoyers get very angry when somebody says, you know where how I built this whole empire? You know who gave me all so much money? My brains. And we say, no, it all came from God. He said, no, it's all mine. So first of all, Prahlad cannot be killed. So he's at its wit's end. Everybody trembled before me except this one boy. You know how much I did? Penance, austerity to become immortal. After such a long tapasya, that too is like that guarantee is not final. There is small asterisk. But at least I am the best of the mortals. But this son of mine didn't do any tapasya, nothing, just standing hari hari sitting in a corner, and I am not able to kill him. So who's making him immortal? At least Brahma said he is not immortal himself, and there is nobody above Brahma. He says, Prahlad, tell me, who gives you strength? And Prahlad says, you know, the one who gives me, the one he gives you. He says, no. And where is this God of yours, so-called God? Prahlad's answer is, where is he not? Now there is one thing which he doesn't like is his son giving him these kind of philosophical answers. Is he in this pillar over here? Now the pillar seems to be like the most unlikely of places, most unglamorous, most unlikely. And how can somebody be in a pillar of all places? And Prahlad's simple reply is, I told you, he's everywhere. And everywhere includes the pillar too. He says, okay, this is how I treat the God of yours. And he gives that pillar a mighty blow with his sword. And suddenly he hears a sound which he has never heard before. He has heard so many kinds of sounds. He has made so many kinds of shrieking sounds. And everybody trembled in fear. But this is one thing he never heard. And then he sees Narasimhadev appearing there. Now Prabhupada explains very clearly in Ishopanishad purport. Narasimhadev did not appear because Hiranyakashipu wanted him to appear. He appeared because Prahlad said that my Lord is everywhere. So Hiranyakashipu is not the cause of the divine descent of Narasimhadev. It is the devotee. So the devotee, Prahlad Maharaj, he saw Narasimhadev and nobody had seen that form before. Now we may feel, we have seen so many pictures, but actually if you see Narasimhadev in action, that could be a very different reaction. And then when he kills him, Prahlad garlands him. Thank you very much for murdering my father. In fact, in Moscow, somebody said that the Hare Krishna should not be given land for the temple, because they worship someone, you know, they worship their god who murders people, and he puts their intestines on his neck. And what kind of gory god is this? It's all pagan, it's all tribal, it's all primitive. In fact, in the early days of Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada had ordered a poster of Narasimhadev killing Hiranyakashipu, the advent of Lord Narasimhadev. And Prabhupada said, did something come in the post? And the devotee was saying, well, someone knows. And he said, yes, I think it was Jamuna Mataji or someone. She said, yes. What to do with that? He says, well, I think we got something by mistake. It was a horrible picture. Prabhupada said, where did you put it? He said, behind your Vyasasan. She felt somebody gave by mistake some kind of horror movie poster or something. And then Prabhupada looked at it and he said, oh, he chanted the Narasimha prayers and he bowed down. And devotee said, we have to offer prayers to that? Prabhupada said, yes. This is not some hideous form of some monster or something. This is Krishna. What is Krishna? Is he playing flute? Sweet. How do we reconcile this? This is Krishna's anger. Whatever Krishna does is absolute. When he is sweet, he is absolutely sweet. When he is angry, he is absolutely angry. The dictionary will give the meaning absolute as something which is pure, like absolute sulfuric acid. No additives. Pure. So similarly, absolute truth means purely the truth. When we say, I am Ramesh, I am an Indian, what is the absolute in it? The soul is only absolute content. This body is born in India, therefore it becomes Indian. If I don't like it, I go and take nationality somewhere else. I am an Australian. Or I sing before the stars and stripes. I am an American now. So the body can change, the mind can change, the intelligence can change. Whatever can change becomes impure and can't be absolute. So therefore, the demigods are praying to something which never, ever, ever changes. And there is a nice story in the literature of the Goswamis, that Krishna once took a four-armed form of Lord Narayan. Because he had just left the gopis, they were not knowing where to find him. So in front of the gopis, Krishna appeared. And the gopis bowed down, said, oh, Namo Narayan, Bhagavan. Could you tell us where to find Lord Krishna? Did he go this way? And he was surprised that some of the Vedic passages, they have thousands and thousands of verses glorifying my 400 four-armed form. And these Braja gopis, they are asking me, did you see Krishna go away from here? They have no meaning for this. After that, Radharani herself comes. When she comes, Krishna wants to again put up that show. But before her, his two arms melt away. That means in front of the gopis, they show that they have no importance for the four-armed form of the Lord. But in front of Radharani, he cannot even maintain that facade, that drama. Her love exposes him. Similarly, if you want to find the Lord, don't try to seek the Lord. Seek a devotee. The devotee will help you seek out the Lord. Yatha hemakara, one Bhagavatam shloka explains. If you want to find gold, where is gold? Somewhere in the earth, right? People want to find gold and manganese in the moon also, but that's a pie in the sky. The moon looks like a pie in the sky, right? But if you want to find any valuable metal, one theory is it's somewhere in the earth. You say, earth? Maybe my own courtyard? My own house? Start digging? You won't find anything. Find out an expert geologist. He may just look at the pattern, he may look at the terrain, he may look at so many things, they have the whole science, and he may say, here. Dig here, you'll find gold. Therefore, those who go on a quest of finding God, ultimately through the pages of Bhagavatam, they come to the conclusion, God is everywhere. Good. Why can't I find him then? If he's everywhere, why can't I find him? No, he's in the temple. So they go to some temple, and then they only see the cobwebs in the corner, or somebody trying to get some money, or somebody picks their pocket. And they say, okay, if my pocket would have been picked in a cinema hall, no problem. But why a temple? So that sentiment also comes up. And in short, this age is so degraded that all endeavors of finding God on your own, which were already doomed to fail, fail very easily, surely, quickly. The Bhagavatam says, therefore, don't try to find God, first of all, with your own efforts, with your own senses. Your own senses and efforts can, to a reasonable extent, help you seek out a devotee of the Lord. If God is everywhere, you can pray to Him. Like milk is everywhere in a cow, but comes out from one particular part. If you don't know that, and try to squeeze in each and every part of hers, thinking someday I will try to get the right part, you'll get a bloody nose, fractured bones. Because you might start squeezing the tail or squeezing the foot. And you may lose the taste for drinking milk. So therefore, seek out a devotee. Once you get in touch with the devotee, then it's very easy. Prabhupada says in lecture, devotee says, here is Krishna, take him. In fact, if we pray to Krishna, give me a devotee, it's the same thing. Krishna says, here is one, follow him. It's easy. He makes all arrangement. So this is the most toughest, difficult task and the most easiest too for someone who knows what to do. The demigods offered their prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he had now appeared in the womb of his devotee Devaki to protect all the devotees harassed by Kamsa and his lieutenants. Thus the Lord acts as Satyavrata. The protection given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be compared to the protection given by the demigods. It is said that Ravana was a great devotee of Lord Shiva, but when Lord Ramachandra went to kill him, Lord Shiva could not give him protection. In one lecture, just to give the Indian audience a taste of the real thing, Prabhupada was saying, so what kind of devotion is going on between Ravana and Shiva? When Lord Ram wanted to kill him, Lord Shiva's father could not protect him. Like we say in India, you know, what about you? Your father cannot do anything here. So, one devotee said, but Prabhupada, Lord Ram was trying to kill Ravana, and Ravana wanted to pray to Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva said, look, normally in a situation I protect, but not in this case. But you go on with my worship. So Prabhupada takes the matter and puts it in a right order. So he says, so what kind of, it is an unparliamentary word in a sense, what kind of dash-dash Lord Shiva is that he's telling his devotee that normally you devote, you give me so many things, I take them, I'm happy, you're happy, but now you're dead, right? What kind of devotion is that? So therefore, he says, why should we take shelter of someone who at one point of time may say, so far I tried to help you, now everybody for himself, you are on your own. That's not the real point. In fact, what can we say about Ravana's devotion? He became a devotee of Shiva because Shiva is Ashutosh, and one day he saw Mother Parvati, he says, hey, my mind has changed. I want her. So there is no question of any personal devotion or in a sense of dedication. And therefore, through so many ways, this kind of demigod worship is prohibited. So, my time is up. I will stop here. We will have other lecturers soon coming. Govind Prabhu is here. Stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granthara Srimad Bhagavat Mahapurana ki, Shri Shri Radha Gopinath ki. Jai.